Brastats, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, Brastats, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Murray.
Yes, sir.
Hello,
good afternoon. How are you?
Not bad.
How are you, sir?
Not bad.
Good, man. Good to hear you. I know this voice well.
Yeah. In fact, we used to be at the bus stop together when we were youngsters. the old natural gas corporation.
Yeah.
And after when you worked in the ministry.
Yes.
Yeah, we have. I remember. Anyhow, what I wanted to talk about is in Sunday's paper, right? Sir Henry Fraser. He called for the naming of the Three Houses Park after the late federal parliamentarian Florence Dish.
Uh-huh.
I just want to relate. Some of you, in fact, you're the ideal person that I went to talk this. I might make my point. Now, we had in 1959, we had a drama group here at St. John the Baptist. We had a play called The Pie and the Tart that was very well received all across Barbados. And the late Sir Craig Gollop, he invited us on several occasions to perform at quite a number of venues across Barbados. And one night, we were invited to a ball at the then YMPC on Beckles Road. And Florence Dish was at the ball. And I remember after our performance, she came backstage. And she not only congratulated us, but she held Gregory, in fact, you caught Gregory at school, you know Gregory Richards, and pulled him on the dance floor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He was a schoolboy.
right.
And, of course, very nervous.
Right.
You know? I just want to relate that, you know, and the type of, and that gave, and the kind of person she was, it gave an indication of the kind of person, a very vivacious, kind of lively kind of individual she was.
But for those listeners who might not know the name or barely know the name, we maybe need to fill in the blanks and let them know who she was. Florence Day, so I think her nickname was Brown Sugar.
Brown Sugar, that's right.
Brown Sugar. And she was...
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a great mixer. She was a great friend of the working class of Black Barbadians and whatnot. She was much beloved and respected by them. Right.
Yeah,
and she ran in the federal election of 1958.
That's right.
And she won a seat in the federal parliament. And as a matter of fact, she won a seat ahead of Earl Barrow.
That's right.
Who did not win a seat to the federal parliament, the federal election that he won. And then she went and served from 1958 to 1962 in the Federation.
Yeah, that's right.
She was well regarded, highly regarded by all persons. And I think it's a worthy consideration. We have to recognize all people who've contributed to the development of Barbados over the years. Color, notwithstanding race, religion, political party, and I think that should be a valid. I think that'd be an excellent gesture, and that should be accompanied by a proper biography as to what she represents, and therefore that might inspire other white Barbadians to do the same thing. You know, some weeks ago we had a talk about race in Barbados and the whites and the blacks.
Yeah.
And I remember my reading in my sociology anthropology that one of the surest tests of the mixing of races is the rate of marriage between the races. I am not sure if we were to judge the rate of races between the blacks and the white and Barbados, Barbadian born blacks and Barbadian born, what the rate would be, but I think that is said to be an indicator as how much integration and intermixing and how cohesive the society. I just thought I'd put that on the table for those who might know more of these things than I do.
But as another point, in fact, this is something that we should, she was, and I've heard several wonderful things about her and her humanitarian ways and all that, you know, but I want to talk about, there's another topic, in fact, two other things I would like to touch on.
The minimum wage.
And I'm speaking as someone who dealt with businesses and the bank, my perspective. I remember one day a lady said to me, you know, in business, sometimes you feel that God forgot you. And I said that to say this. Do you know how many times banks, I have to oblige customers, to allow them, their overdraft limit, all that, and allow them to to have wages for the workers.
Right.
Well, I say this, in fact, I'm looking at it from a practical perspective. I wonder how anybody at a time when sales are, I mean, right now must be, sales have fallen tremendously. I wonder how we can talk about giving a minimum increase in the minimum wage. And I remember reading Lee Kuan Yew's book, the former prime minister of Singapore. You know what he said? He said that in Singapore, wages were linked to growth. If there was no growth, no wages. Maybe you might not agree with him. But
yeah.
I'm saying that at a time like this, it seems very rather. I mean, I can't imagine what's happening in the bank these days when they're dealing with especially small businesses, what they're going through. You know? So
At the point you made about small businesses, the bank, I know you are a long-standing banker, a highly regarded one. I think nowadays you're hearing that the bankers in Barbados, because the banks are the headquarters, they are run from overseas. They take instructions from Toronto and Trinidad and other places, and that there's very little leeway. In other words, the kind of flexibility you might have had in your day regarding overdrafts might not be possible today, given the strong control that is exerted on for all kind of something, the smallest sums out of the head office. And therefore, that might, would you say, for say that in those conditions, it is possible that the private sector's concerns and fears are valid, should be listened to, and that they have a thing that should be considered, that may have a good case?
Of course. Look, I tell somebody, and I'll praise your former boss, right? Your former boss, Tom Adams, right? The bank, see? Another the bank. It was important. A national bank was important because the national, of course, we are Barbadians, and a national bank would have far more consideration for our small businesses and Barbadians than a foreign bank. Don't forget, a foreign bank main interest in the country is to make money.
Okay.
And whether you like it or not, that's the fact. I mean, we have to accept that fact. And that's, they cannot have the kind of sympathy. I mean, all right, look, let me ask you a question. And I was talking to a friend of mine about this. You know, whenever there's a major crisis in the economy, people talk about the private sector-led growth. And you hear that all the time, right? But when there's a crisis in the economy, who has to come in and lead the growth? Who? Not the government.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. But this is what I'm saying. I'll take the United States. Right now, they have to, the government has to inject $1.9 billion as a stimulus package to stimulate the economy and to revive the economy. Similarly, here, they have to do something similar. So what I'm saying is that when you have foreign people controlling your banking system, surely they cannot see it like you, right? How you see it. That's why I will forever praise your former boss, because I think you're one of the best things ever happened to this country.
I had two great, in my view, I have two great former bosses.
Hello?
Yeah, in my view, I had two great former bosses.
Yeah,
but Adams and Owen Adams,
the only thing, the latter one had a different view on the private sector, the role of the private sector. He felt there was less involvement in the economy, whereas Tom felt, obviously, and he led the way. In fact, when you're talking about economic nationalism, I always say that somebody should look at Tom Adams and economic nationalism. Because
Without being doctrinaire, before being radical, he was a pragmatic man. He saw the need to inject that into the society, hence the institutions they created.
For example, if you go back to the bank creation of the bank, many people don't understand the saving the foreign exchange. They just saw a bank, but they didn't realize the foreign exchange that the Barbados saved as a result of having a domestic bank. I'll show you how. I remember a guy told me he used to, all the banks, if you remember, it was Old Savings Bank. All the banks used to vie. Foreign banks used to vie for deposits from the savings bank, and obviously give them a higher rate of interest to attract the deposits.
Right.
So you know that when the National Bank was established, that stopped. Although that they would have loaned these funds to Barbadians, make profit, which was profits were repatriated, obviously. But after the bank, that stopped. Everything came to Barbadians, right?
Yeah.
Simple. Right?
All right.
Well, okay, that was right. Fantastic visionary.
Yeah. All right, we have to take a break and we talk again soon. Thank you very much for calling. It's always very enlightening to talk to you. Take care. This is Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Mr. Murray.
Hello. Yes, it is.
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you, young man?
Yes, I'm fine. What about yourself?
I'm good too. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to respect these senior citizens, you know. Don't mind, I'm a senior myself.
I'm still on the way. I'm still on the road to being a senior citizen. I'm not quite a senior citizen. I'm still on the road.
Okay, that's good. That's good. That's breaking news, then.
Being a senior citizen is a process. It's not a destination. It's not something you reach. You keep growing and growing. I'm not old. I'm just getting older.
Yes. Well, I can agree with you more. So I want to endorse you out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Murray, what I called to tell you about, right? As you know that, shipping is my forte.
Right.
And I have worked 95% of my working life in shipping, around ships and shipping. Excuse me. And I want to say that I feel so smart to hear the minister. I felt so smart to hear the minister in Parliament saying something that I was preaching for a long time now and has been endorsed by the government. And that makes me feel really good. And that is, I say that the government should prepare people for work on the cruise ships when the cruise ship season starts back, because our Prime Minister was very generous and kind to the cruise ship companies. So the only thing they can really do is to show us, you know, reciprocate in a very generous way. And that way would be to give our Beijing young people some work to get them off the blocks and different things. And I've been saying that now for the longest time. And I am happy to hear the minister, Minister Kirk Humphrey, has spoken about it, and I even spoke about doing the STCW course, which is I can't remember the acronym what it is, but anyway, it is something that you have to have, even if you go on a ship as a captain or a mess man, you got to have that. And the minister is saying that all that is going to be in place to train people here at the Samuel Jackman Institute. And I like to call it the Samuel Jackman Institute of Technology.
Right.
And not just the Samuel Jackman Institute, of Technology.
I agree. I always thought that was an unfinished name.
Yes. Of Technology. And I hope that they would correct it. But I just calling to say, you know, that I feel so happy to know that the minister has endorsed what or the government, I should say, is going to do what I was suggesting, and I'm happy about that.
I'd like to say that I do recall your speaking, making that request and pointing that out for several times over the past few years, and
yes.
I think we talk about the blue economy. But I think what is being proposed has to be put in the context of, to my mind, of a bigger picture of seafaring as a profession.
Right.
As an opportunity.
Back to what it used to be.
Because I remember the days of the Harrison boats. I mean, when a man was a seaman with Harrison boat, you only had to look at his clothes alone.
Yeah.
Know that he's a seaman. So yeah. they had status. People envied the clothes. And I remember Burton. You remember the Burton? Burton pants or Burton shoe, Burton belt or something so?
They used to be a lot of Burton pants with the Burton buckle head.
Yeah,
and Clark,
right, that's
and Clark
right.
Shoes.
That's right, that's right.
And the real ballon shirts from England.
Yeah, that's right.
And when you see the first coming, you know, well, there's a seaman, no come home.
Yeah, that's right.
He used to dress really nice with some nice cologne and stuff.
I would also like to see, in addition to that expansion that was mentioned by Minister Humphrey, I would like to see us doing whatever to rebuild a yachting industry, a yachting sector. Barbados has lost a lot of the yachting advantage and prestige to the other islands. We need to do whatever it takes. I mean, we've been talking about a marina for years in Bridgetown.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, and this goes back to the days of the late Tom Adams, we used to stand and outside government headquarters and look at the water and dream and plan and talk and discuss. Let me finish the point. Right?
Yeah.
And he succeeded. I know the same thing happened to Prime Minister Arthur. We're trying to get the private sector and barbers involved. They let all of the warehouse, empty warehouses which are not productive, and they were trying to get, but we could not get the cooperation that we wanted to bring that about. So now we are lagging far behind our law place in the Caribbean. And we have, you know, in business they say location. The three biggest things in business are location.
Yeah.
We have a natural advantage by location, and we have to do for the time forever. And therefore we have to seek to maximize and take the fullest advantage of that, which we extended for yachting also and take it to a different level.
But the thing about bringing yachts here and those big, pretty mega yachts, the problem that we have after the last time I was in the port, where, before I lived down there 6 years ago, the problem we had was fendering. The fendering was mostly designed for big ships. So a lot of those yachts when they come in, they had to use extra fendering by using standing for yachts.
Explain to the public what you mean by fendering.
All right, fendering is when you come alongside the ship, you bring your vessel alongside the docks, and there's a rubber or some kind of material in between the ship and the dock
to stop the ship.
Yeah. Right, a buffer to stop the ship or the yacht or whatever from rubbing on the docks, and it could damage the vessel, and it could also damage the docks. So to avoid all of that, they use these for yachts, and some cruise ships they use these big rubber fenders called Yokohamas, that you put them in between the ship and the fender to keep the ship, not only to save the ship and the docks, but to keep the ship fairly far off the docks. Because when you put in one of those, you could get an extra 3-4 feet of the ship away from the docks. And that'd be good for some. Cruise ships mostly use them.
But that cannot be a problem that's impossible to serve for. Other people do it. It exists. You just describe it. So that should sound like we factored into any design and configuration of any marinas you have.
Glenn, if they can build a space for yachts, that is, and they've got to look at it. Defendering is a very important thing because those yachts are cost lots of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know what? And people don't want the yacht damage. And when you see the yacht shining, you would think some boy sticks and glass. Some shiny paper on them, but that'd be the paint and the work in the yachts. And people don't want that to happen to the yachts, you know.
All right, sir.
Before you go,
yes, sir.
I also mentioned on a program that CBC had recently with the same minister, Kurt Humphrey, and some people from the coastal zone, and I was suggesting to them that we could look at. I don't know if you've ever gone to Martinique. But in Martinique, right off the northwestern side of Martinique, they got a fish farm there outside of the capital, Port-au-Prince.